Since it is Wednesday, this is our Vent Stay segment time on The Exchange. Your chance to vent your spleen politely on a couple of topics in the news. We're going to go very heavy and very light. Police shootings as one topic on this Vent Stay, and what you are thankful for as the other topic. Our phone number, 800-838-3760, 800-838-3760. Our email address, jx@jeffnet.org. Police shootings first. The name Ferguson will long be connected to the death of a black man by gunfire from a white police officer. It's a conversation we've had before in this country, but it keeps happening. Let's widen the focus to all cases of gunfire involving police, whether moving in one direction or two, shooting at the police or shooting from the police. It happens a lot, we think. The trouble is, one thing you quickly notice is that there are not very reliable numbers on civilians killed by police across the country. So we end up making some assumptions and not knowing if they are wrong or not. No question, police are in tough, life-threatening situations all the time. Decisions made in an instant can and do alter lives forever. So that leads to the questions for us to consider on this Vents Day. Are the rules for deploying deadly force by police in need of revision? If so, how to change? What can be done in minority communities in particular to build trust with police? You can probably think of many other questions and answers in this line. Please be polite. Our phone number on Vents Day, 800-838-3760, 800-838-3760, jx@jeffnet.org if you prefer email. Our other topic this Vents Day is considerably lighter, and it is our annual perusal of things we are thankful for on this Thanksgiving Eve. From the very small and very personal to the global, from I'm thankful for paper towels to I'm glad China and the United States have a new climate approach. Let her rip. What are you thankful for this Thanksgiving? Let's hear your thoughts about that and about police shootings and what we do to curtail them in this country. I had mentioned coming into this segment that one of the things you notice is that there are not really good numbers on civilians killed by police across the country, and this was something that was noticed right after the Michael Brown shooting back in August, which, of course, culminated this week in the decision by a St. Louis County grand jury not to indict the police officer, Darren Wilson, who killed Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri, in early August. Coming back to the discussion, though, about information about shootings involving officers and civilians killed, The B newspapers in California back in August put out editorials about this that read as follows. The FBI collects extensive data about crimes from every law enforcement agency in the United States. It has an entire division devoted to gathering information about officers killed and assaulted in the line of duty. The division compiles data such as what weapons were used against the officer and what time of day the incident occurred. But when it comes to civilians dying at the hands of police, the information is spotty and of dubious accuracy. There's not even a comprehensive list of the reports of excessive use of force by police, though Congress required the reporting of such data 20 years ago. You get that? 20 years ago, Congress said we need reports on use of excessive force by police. There is not that process happening yet. The B newspapers go on. It's an astonishing gap in our country's extensive criminal justice data gathering, one more likely to do with politics than policy. It must change. It is clear that, like with guidance on marijuana, the feds aren't going to take a lead on officer-involved shootings. Leadership must come from the states. Remember, again, this is from California. So in California, that means Governor Jerry Brown, Attorney General Kamala Harris, and the legislature. The California Attorney General's office does collect death-in-custody data reported quarterly, as required by law. That's a place to start. But the figures are not published, which means they are essentially meaningless to the public. The B newspapers continue, we hope police agencies and their officers will champion the disclosure because if there is an increase of officer-involved shootings, the trend might reflect the growing danger to them, police, on the streets. And if they're having more armed confrontations, we need to figure out why. That from Fresno B, Sacramento B, Modesto B, all the B newspapers put that editorial out months ago to talk about the fact that we just don't have a lot of information about civilians killed at the hands of police, as happened to Michael Brown. As almost happened in South Carolina, is a different story we can talk about coming up that got a South Carolina state trooper fired for firing shots at an unarmed man. Couple of issues to deal with here. And yes, race certainly can be a part of it. But what are the logical steps? Do we need to come back to square one and figure out the rules of engagement for police and the public? What do you think needs to happen to stop police shootings from happening, whether it's people shooting at the police, whether it's the police shooting at people, whether both sides are armed, whether one side is armed. Let's get your thoughts on what the approach should be. 800-838-3760, anywhere in our listening area. 800-838-3760. You can send emails to jx@jeffnet.org as well. Our other topic on this Vents Day is, what are you thankful for? It is Thanksgiving Eve. Tell us before the turkey hits the table what you'd like to say thanks for this year. 800-838-3760, jx@jeffnet.org. Let's start with Dave in Fortuna. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange on Vents Day.
Yes, good morning. Yes, I just heard that this morning. I was on the station I listened to the radio this morning, was able to hear the officer that was involved in that. And in the way that it sounds, because nobody was there. And even if you weren't there, that's the main thing. He was there, and what happened did, and he was very confident in what he did and what happened. And he struggled for the firearm in his vehicle when it first started. So it was, and he was able to get it and come out alive after it. I think that pretty much says, what he was trying to do.
All right. I heard the same reports myself, and Dave, I appreciate you bringing that up. What essentially transpired, according to Darren Wilson himself, is that he was sitting in his car after he had stopped Michael Brown and a companion on the street in Ferguson. And Michael Brown, a couple of witnesses do report seeing Michael Brown sticking his head into the police car. According to Darren Wilson, there was a struggle for the gun. He tried to squeeze off two shots, and the gun didn't go off the first two times. Third time it did, that was the first shot that actually hit Michael Brown, which provides for the spray of blood inside the car itself. Here again, you're still talking an unarmed person, and I don't know if just, frankly, when you're in danger for your life and you are carrying a badge, you need to be able to squeeze off a shot from a gun at that point. I don't know what the other options are. Don't know what the other options are that are trained, but let's talk about what approaches should be. We hear this too much over the course of a year, don't we? In your mind, are there too many shootings involving police, either as victims or as perpetrators? Join us on the exchange with your thoughts about how to stop the next police shooting from happening. 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. Here's Shane in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange on Vents Day.
Good morning.
Hi.
Last caller's comment just segues right into exactly what I wanted to say. It's interesting where we hear the narrative of the police officer. Michael Brown's friend, forget his name, was also in there. Says that the reason he ended up inside the police vehicle was because Officer Wilson opened the door, hit him with the door. That angered the officer. Then, thinking that Michael Brown was trying to push the door on him, he grabbed him in a headlock, dragging him back into the car by his head. And at the point that the officer draws his weapon, I just want to paint a different picture because, it could go any way, and the only narrative we get to hear is the officer's because somebody else is dead. But what if, say, you're in that struggle and you're in a headlock and you see somebody pulling a gun and putting it to your stomach, and are you going to grab that weapon and try to stop that weapon from going off? I would believe so. Secondly, my main point is, why do we not have GoPros on all of our police officers? And I think those of us in Jackson County need to push for our new sheriff, Corey Falls, and for the police chief of Medford to, it's $350 per officer. We have the craziest toys for our police departments. They're running around in Abram tanks and goofy stuff, and we can't put GoPros on them? Because now we have to believe what the police officer said. If pro on him, it would be a done deal. We would say, oh, that's exactly what happened, or oh, that's not exactly what happened.
Right. So have a camera available, which is something that has been talked about a lot. There is no video evidence of this. And in fact, if you watch the news conference the other night with the St. Louis County prosecutor, Bill McCulloch, he made reference to somebody's shooting video that at least had the audio of the shots. And of course, the reporter's ears all went up. And at the end, they asked, well, is that video available? He said, no, the video does not actually show the shooting. It recorded the sound of the shots that were off camera at that time. But a camera would have made a big difference here. And you bring up some great points there, Shane, about the fact that there are different accounts just based on the things that are physical facts. The door of the police car opened and shut again. Did it open and shut because it banged into Michael Brown, or did Michael Brown forcefully shut it because he was angered at it being opened in the first place? Interpretations differ widely. Darren Wilson has his own impression. We don't know Michael Brown's impression because he's dead. Outside of the Michael Brown, Darren Wilson altercation, what do we do as a society to address situations where there is engagement with potential gunfire from or to the police? 800-838-3760 on this Vents Day, on any Vents Day for that matter. 800-838-3760. Email jx@jeffnet.org, or if you'd rather not talk about shootings anymore, and I fully understand, tell us what you're thankful for this Thanksgiving Eve. 800-838-3760, jx@jeffnet.org. Beppy in Medford emails, "Surely we're ready at this point in American history to reconsider policing and how it functions. We own more guns than ever before, and just since 2005, more guns owned by women. We've allowed the NRA to co-opt the dialogue about guns in our country, and I think here are more citizens, including police. There are more citizens, including police, who would like to see more nuance in our gun laws. I believe that Darren Wilson was probably afraid in that moment when he fired the deadly shots. And the questions are, why was he so afraid and why discharge so many bullets into one person? Yes, we need to carefully reconsider rules of engagement. We must discuss this stuff." That from Beppy in Medford. And she adds, her thankfuls are for a warm house and good coffee. Beppy, good to hear from you. Thanks for that. Let us go to Sheila in Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange on Vents Day. Sheila, go ahead. Sheila, I'm going to put you on hold because you need to not listen to us through the radio. We are 10 seconds behind on the radio. So, Sheila, get up to the phone and we'll get your call in here. Let's go to Ryan in Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange on Vents Day.
Hi, thank you.
Sure.
So I wanted to just say, along with the last comment one of the last comments you were reading off about the officers being scared, I really don't feel the officers, or I know that officers are not trained in basic hand-to-hand combat and self-defense, and a lot of times officers go through like a one-day course on how to protect their weapon if someone's trying to grab it, or how to physically restrain someone or defend themselves. A lot of officers come in with no background in how to use martial arts or training of any sort, and so if someone has a knife, if somebody even attempts to grab at their gun, if somebody even just starts physically trying to strike them or hit them, if they don't have any idea how to defend themselves without pulling a weapon or moving to deadly force, you know, and of course they're taught how dangerous their jobs are, and I think a lot of them are scared and a lot of them are on edge. And I think that if we could develop the empty hand skills and the ability to just raise the confidence level of how to protect their weapon, how to restrain assailants, and had more training for law enforcement officers to deal with these situations, not just a one-day class on here's how to defend yourself, now, you know, go deal with someone who might be twice your size and maybe unarmed, but just a physical threat.
A threat to you. Yeah, indeed. Well, those are good points to bring up, too. And I really appreciate that, Ryan, because the fact is there must be steps to take into account up to the point of using deadly force. I don't know what those are. And I would really appreciate it if people who do have police experience would call in as well. Give us your thoughts on what should be happening. What can we do to prevent the next potential police shooting? 800-838-3760, 800-838-3760, anywhere in our listening area. You can send an email in as well to jx@jeffnet.org. This is Vents Day. We're talking about police shootings and also what you're thankful for on this Thanksgiving Eve. Let's try Sheila in Eugene one more time. And Sheila, you there this time?
Yeah, good morning.
Hi.
Am I there?
Yes.
I'd like to point out that even in this high-profile interview, some of the questions weren't asked. Like when, you know, like if you reach inside the police car, what happened to pepper spray and stun guns? What happened to that? There's many ways to decapacitate a person.
Right. Yeah. That was the question just a moment ago as well. What are the steps up to the gun? What are the steps before the gun that are within the range of possibilities?
I don't know why George Stephanopoulos didn't ask that question.
When you saw the interview with Darren Wilson this morning?
I saw it yesterday.
Mm-hmm. All right.
I haven't saw the full interview, but I don't believe Stephanopoulos asked about stun guns or pepper spray.
All right. Fair enough. Thanks for that, Sheila. Appreciate it. Let's go to Clay in Grants Pass. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange on Vents Day.
Hey, thanks. I just wanted to point out that weapon retention is something that a police officer is trained to do, And if somebody goes after their weapon, they are trained to turn that into, you know, force against the aggressor. There is no reason for anyone to approach or attack a police officer. You are supposed to comply with the police officer. And if you are threatening in any way or go for their weapon, I think that you should be ready to die, because there is no way you are going to, I mean, that officer is trained to protect himself. And if you take their weapon, you should be in trouble, because there's many times when officers actually get attacked and killed by people taking their weapons. It happens very routinely.
Yeah, but you hear the point again is with the lack of any sort of camera or recording device there, who made the gun the issue? You know, was the gun the issue because the officer was reaching for it? Was the gun the issue because Michael Brown was reaching for it?
The issue is that the people were not, he was not complying with the officer.
Mm-hmm.
The officer stopped him, and he approached him in a threatful way.
All right. Thanks for that, Clay. Appreciate it. Let's go to Seth in Central Point. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange on Vents Day, how to prevent police shootings and what you are thankful for, our topics.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'd like to comment, too. I believe, too, in most situations that, you know, police are there to control the situation. It seems when a gun is drawn that control of the situation seems lost at that point, or at least when it's fired. You know, that, you know, there's a lot of progress in non-lethal weapons. I understand the police officers need to protect themselves, but it seems not only the negotiation part of it, you know, the diplomacy, being able to calm the suspect or individual down. It seems like there's a lot of non-lethal options, even disabling the suspect before they become lethally dangerous, where we can later follow up with that whole situation and make it better for everybody.
All right. Appreciate that, Seth, very much. Other thoughts are more than welcome on this Vents Day about police shootings and how to prevent them and what you are thankful for. A lot of focus thus far, obviously. And what are the other options? Before you get to the use of a gun, what are some of the other things that are at a police officer's disposal and how much are those trained in? Join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. Our other topic is what you are thankful for, and it is on that topic we got an email from Dondi in Ashland. She says, I'm thankful for same-sex marriage becoming legal across most of the United States. We are finally joining the other civilized nations and recognizing this right to equality. Thanks for that, Dondi. Let's go to Jim in Grants Pass. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange on Vents Day.
Yes, I am most thankful, and I have always been, for people putting up with me for 73 years. I think they've carried a good burden.
Well,
number
said.
Two, the word engagement to most people implies forethought. Do you understand?
There's a difference between...
It does not imply thinking, you know, what you're going to do in a microsecond, a half a second. That, just the word engagement implies forethought. And if something, the reaction time is almost automatic, that's technically not engagement. I don't know what to call it.
So when we're talking about rules of engagement, then are we talking about rules of confrontation instead?
Yes, more with something where there was forethought. Okay, this is going to happen. These two people are, he's getting closer to me, blah, 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 blah. One other quick thing. You might ask some of your foreign students there at the university. One thing that I've noticed, they talk about this is a black guy, a white guy.
Mm-hmm.
Both lived in this country for generations. Most other in stories like this from other countries, it's a Muslim did a Hindu, blah, blah, a Palestinian, an Arab. That comes out long before the color of their skin.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks for that, Jim. Appreciate it. Let's go to Joe and Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange on Vents Day, police shootings and what we're thankful for, our topics.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I'd just like to mention briefly what I'm thankful for this Thanksgiving.
Okay.
One is the love of a beautiful significant other, and the second is that I had a bout with cancer earlier this year, and for the moment, it's in full remission. I'm very, very prayerfully grateful for both those.
Well, Joe, and we're grateful for you sharing those with us. Thanks so much, and have a great Thanksgiving. Let's go to Brad in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange on Vents Day. We're giving thanks, and we're talking about police shootings as well.
I'm thankful for our ecosystem, and I'm thankful for those people who are trying to safeguard it in the face of global warming. That's one thing. On the police, I'm wondering, what is our obligation in terms of compliance? If a policeman tells you to lay on the ground on your face, you have to do it? And is there a situation, if the police can kill somebody because they feel like they were going to get shot or whatever, do we have that right? When does someone have the right to protect themselves from an overweening police presence? Is there ever a situation where we have the right to fight back or shoot back?
Well, you know, from the perspective of police, I would say follow the instructions now and bring up the case later. There's a piece that Sunil Duda wrote that I grabbed out of the Washington Post from August, who says, if you don't want to get hurt, don't challenge me. I'm a cop. That's the basic issue there. So interesting advice there from him. But, you know, it does get to the larger question of like, hey, look, I'm walking in the middle of a street, but it's a residential street. Who am I hurting here?
Right. And are we on the way to a police state where we give over all of our safety and authority to policemen, whoever they are, with that, whatever agenda they have?
I don't know.
And there have been a number of cases, for instance, across the country where they bust the wrong house.
Mm-hmm.
They go in and they attack people that are utterly innocent. I mean, what are these people to do? Somebody comes busting in their house with guns out and stuff.
Right. In fact, I knew some people back in my hometown in Connecticut who had pretty much all their wedding gifts broken by the police looking for drugs. No drugs were found. And it took years for them to get, I think, a few hundred dollars in a settlement out of the police department. So thanks for that, Brad. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you, Jeffrey.
You bet. Let's go to Mike in Eagle Point. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange on Vents Day, police shootings and what we're thankful for, the topics.
Good morning. You know, I think if police traveled with partners, they would have more options and would not be required to resort to lethal force as often.
Yeah, I've wondered about that myself, too, the situations in which police travel often alone in their cars.
It would cost more money. It would cost more money in city budgets, but that's the trade-off.
All right. Thanks for that, Mike. Appreciate it. I don't know if it's Avian or Avian in Mendocino. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange on Vents Day.
Oh, hi. There was something for days, I've been listening to all this, and I haven't heard mentioned. I remember in August at the beginning of all this, there was a woman who had a cell phone video of part of that incident, and I just haven't heard anybody refer to it, and I was wondering if you remember that.
I
remember it was aired on, you know, national news several times, and I just haven't heard anybody refer to that.
Was it not particularly usable because it was blurry and from a long distance or something?
I remember seeing pretty clearly, so I'm kind of wondering if it was, you know, a piece of information, evidence that was, you know, suppressed or taken or ignored, or I just, do you remember that?
I don't, but I'm getting advised by Megan here that she thought that might have been from another incident in the same area. So
it was pretty clear that it was that incident there. But I'm just curious because I remember it being on the news, and now that everything's gotten even more tumultuous, I haven't heard anyone refer to that. So,
all right.
Okay.
Thanks for that. Appreciate it. Final email here on this Vents Day from Amy in Ashland. She says, while only around 10% of the general population report experiencing some sort of family or domestic violence, 40% of police officer families report the same. This is a psychosocial problem, and too many policemen, they go into this position because they feel a need for power in all aspects of their lives. These problems are largely ignored by police departments, and this affects not only the families of officers, but carries into their work, putting all citizens at risk. This isn't meant to be a large generalization about all officers, but addressing violent tendencies could be a start to preventing some tragic events like the Michael Brown shooting. That's from Amy in Ashland, and she concludes with her thankful for. She says, I'm thankful for my community and the beauty of the Rogue Valley. Well said, Amy. Thanks for joining us. Thanks to all of you for tuning in and joining in this Vents Day on the Jefferson Exchange.